Evangelist Bob Jones founded the school 73 years ago for whites only. Today, many say his grandson, Bob Jones III, runs it as if it were still 1927 with only one policy change. Other races are now welcomed at its campus, but no interracial dating or marriage is permitted, and no homosexuals. And in what many see as the epitome of religious intolerance, the school's leaders have described Catholics as members of a cult and the Pope a dangerous leader.
That was an NBC report from back during the 80s when they were talking about Bob Jones University. Now, if you haven't heard of Bob Jones University, you belong to a growing number of people. Bob Jones University is a Christian college. It is Bible-centered and all the rest. Jesus this, God that. But it still fancies itself as a college. And in recent years, admissions have been dropping and dropping precipitously. So why are we talking about Bob Jones University? Bob Jones University is part of a long, sordid history that we have in this country, one that is steeped with deep racism. This country was born with bloodshed, and it will go out just the same if we don't begin to face our own history. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 210. Bloody hell am I glad to be here, and I'm certainly glad that you're here as well. So, whatever's happening in the news right now that is gigantic, screaming, glowing headlines, we're just going to let that be, because I would like to talk about some other things. So, last week, you probably didn't hear about it because it's one of those things that Donald Trump didn't do, so it's not going to be a big screaming headline. But Bob Jones University finally earned accreditation. For 90 years that the school's been around, and it's a college, and they've been trying to get accreditation, but their math and their science and some of these other programs and the fact that they're Bible-centric, they weren't able to get accreditation. But last week, they finally got this sought-after accreditation. Now, why is Bob Jones University so important? It has been at the center of electoral politics for the Republican Party. More than a few Republican presidents have gone there and spoke when they were candidates. And this is really no different than when, say, Ronald Reagan went to Philadelphia, Mississippi, and spoke directly to white supremacists about states' rights. And when Donald Trump Jr. did the same thing during the 2016 campaign, they know who their base is. They know where their base lies. And they want to reach out to them directly, which is why they tend to go where all the Klan people are, because they know who their base is. See, the Republican Party, and I challenge you here, the Republican Party has nothing to offer the working man. I don't want to say that they never have, because there was certainly a time that they did. And in this country, it is incredibly important that we have an opposing party. I am not one who believes that the Democratic Party should just be given absolute power. And this is where I differ with a lot of my Republican colleagues, because there are more than a few, and I've heard more than a few Republicans say this, they would be perfectly okay with Republicans just having absolute power and running everything. And they can't think of a single thing that the Democrats have ever done to them, done for them. And they say this in the face of the fact that they get weekends off, that they get paid overtime, that they have all of these rights that Republicans didn't fight for, that Democrats fought for. But Republicans have offered nothing to the working man, certainly not in recent history. And so Republicans have to find another way to get elected. And the best way for them to do that is to speak directly to people's fears, to tell them the brown people are coming, the brown people are coming to take your jobs, and the black people are doing this, and the Chinese people are doing that, and whatever, and the Somali. The 2016 election was the first time I heard a Republican candidate come out against the Somalis. I didn't even know we had a huge Somali population. in the United States. But alas, we do. So it was standard for a Republican politician when they wanted to become a candidate, or after they became a serious candidate, to go and speak at Bob Jones University, a historically white-only university. So this from Paul Hyde over at Greenville News. After shutting accreditation for most of its 90-year history, Bob Jones University in the last 6 years has made strides in achieving this designation of accreditation a top priority. The school has officially earned regional accreditation from the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commissions on Colleges. This change means that more doors will be open throughout the nation to BJU graduates who want to attend graduate school, according to BJU officials. Students will find it easier to transfer credits to other colleges and universities. Plus, some scholarships are only available for students attending accredited universities. The boost in prestige could help BJU's own student recruitment efforts. Being granted regional accreditation is one of the biggest milestones in Bob Jones' 90-year history, according to BJU President Steve Pettit. The decision came amongst, as I mentioned before, declining enrollment, and after complaints from some alumni who found difficulty getting into graduate schools or obtaining professional certifications in other states. In 2006, BJU's student enrollment was 4,800. Today, enrollment is about 2,700. So they're going to get their accreditation. And as a part of that accreditation, I suppose this is the point at which we're just going to start forgetting about Bob Jones University history.
Let me show you what Mr. Jones's current thinking is and put it on the screen, because this is just as disturbing. We believe that the Lord God created races with distinctions and that races are meant to be separate from one another. We basically accept that there are three races, Caucasians, Negroes, Orientals. Caucasians can't date Orientals. Orientals can't date Caucasians, and neither of them can date Negroes. That's what he believes.
Yeah, well, I disagree with that.
Bob Jones University is opposed to intermarriage of the races because it breaks down the barriers God has established. When Jesus Christ returns to the earth, he will establish world unity, but until then, a divided earth seems to be his plan. Throughout your campaign, you've said, I'm a uniter, not a divider. Do you condone that thinking? And if not, why go there?
I don't accept that particular policy of Bob Jones University.
It's amazing to me when you think about, say, African Americans and Christianity. And I've been in a lot of African American communities, and rarely will you find a people that is more religious than a lot of black folks. And it's stunning to me because they do so despite history. Part of slavery, or part of the justification for white people enslaving black people, was Christianity. They believed that they, white people, forgetting the fact that Jesus was Middle Eastern, white people believe that they were superior to black people and that black people were merely here to serve us. And that's not the only case. You know, as you know, the Chinese built the railroads. We felt in this country that we as white people, now think about it. We came here when this land belonged to the Indians for thousands of years, right? What we now call the Native Americans, it belonged to the Indians for thousands of years. And then we came here and we wiped them out, gave them blankets full of smallpox and put them on reservations and the Trail of Tears. And to this day, we're still yanking their land from them because we believe that white people are the ultimate, right? And it's never made a lot of sense to me. And in the justification for this, we did so believing that we had the divine hand, right? The divine hand of God was in all of this. Now, I understand that you cling to a higher power for spirituality and all these other things, but this history, this America's history, you know, that is steeped in Christianity, used that religion to enslave black people. And to this day, you will find both the Klan and African Americans worshiping Jesus, worshiping God, Christianity. But the Klan believes that they are white They are right and they are chosen. And then, of course, African Americans believe a little more like I believe. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, Jesus is real and God is real and all this. They believe that all children, that we're all God's children. And that's much more of a belief system that I can get behind. But I'm having trouble ignoring how even to this day, in 2017, you know, decades after we ended segregation, decades after we ended separate but equal, decades after we ended slavery, actually we've probably been done with slavery more than 100 years, and even still, there's this idea among religious whites, white Christian males largely, that black people should be subservient to them.
We're going to build a wall, folks. We're going to build a wall. Don't worry, we're going to build the wall. That wall will go up so fast, your head will spin. And you'll say, you know, he meant it. And you know what else I mean? Mexico is going to pay for the wall.
100%. There's always making an other out of a group of brown people. They're always making an other out of, whether it's the Mexicans or the African Americans. There's always making the Somalis, always making an other out of somebody that's brown. So, quoting here from an article by Chuck McKnight over at Patheos. Now, the point of the entire article, the article is called, Can You Love LGBTQ People While Condemning Their Relationships? But there's a part of the article I would like to talk about that actually has absolutely nothing to do with that part of it. So, quoting here, in 2008, Bob Jones University finally offered an official policy for their long-standing discriminatory policy of not allowing interracial dating or marriage. Part of their apology, quote, from almost two centuries, American Christianity, including BJU, in its early stages, was characterized by the segregationist ethos of American culture. Consequently, for far too long, we allowed institutional policies regarding race to be shaped more directly by that ethos than by the principles and precepts of the scriptures. We conformed to the culture rather than providing a clear Christian counterpoint. In so doing, we failed to accurately represent the Lord and to fulfill the commandment to love others as ourselves. For these failures, we are profoundly sorry. Through no known antagonism toward minorities or expressions of racism on a personal level have ever been tolerated on our campus. We allowed institutional policies to remain in place that were racially hurtful. Okay, unquote. So here's what I believe. They finally decided in 2008 when they ended that policy. And George W. Bush spoke at their campus. They finally decided in 2008 that, you know what, we probably shouldn't have this policy. Probably because it's looked down upon and it's not tolerated. And in recent years, admission to the school has been dropping. Less and less people are interested in going to the school. So it seems to me that we were moving, and at that time, in 2008, we got a black president. Seems to me that at that time, we were moving away from these racist policies that shaped early America, right? Right up to the 2000s. We were moving away from those things. Now, Bob Jones University has earned accreditation. And the KKK has somebody in the White House, has lots of somebodies in the White House, and has somebody as the Attorney General, the Klan. In 2017, has all these prominent positions in the White House. And now, Bob Jones, which started as a whites-only school and believed that the races should be kept separate, has now finally earned accreditation. It seems to me that this year we're going backwards. So, Bob Jones University was founded in 1927 and did not admit black students until 1971. And their policy against interracial dating remained in place until 2000, when it was finally overturned after George W. Bush spoke at the university. In a 1960 sermon, quoting here, from the university's founder and first president, Bob Jones Sr., they had a booklet that they would hand out to everybody. It said this was their position paper, and this was at least until 1986, so this is during Reagan. Quote, Paul said that God hath made of one blood all nations of men, but he also fixed the bounds of their habitation. When nations break out of their boundaries and begin to do things contrary to the purpose of God and the directive will of God, they have trouble. The world is in turmoil today because men and nations go contrary to the clear teaching of the Word of God. Now, what is the matter? There is an effort today to disturb the established order. Wait a minute. Listen, I'm talking straight to you. White folks and colored folks, you listen to me. You cannot run over God's plan and God's established order without having trouble. God never meant to have one race. It was not his purpose at all. These religious liberals, and they're always going after liberals, are the worst infidels in many ways of the country. And some of them are filling pulpits down south. They do not believe the Bible any longer, so it does not do any good to quote it to them. They have gone over to modernism, and they are leading the white people astray at the same time. And they are leading colored Christians astray. But every good, substantial, Bible-believing, intelligent, orthodox, there's that word, we talked about the orthodox Christians, orthodox Christian can read the Word of God and know what is happening in the South now is not of God. If you are against segregation and against racial separation, then you are against God Almighty, because he made racial separation in order to preserve the race through whom he could send the Messiah and through whom he could send the Bible. God is the author of segregation. God is the author of Jewish separation and Gentile separation and Japanese separation. God made of one blood, all nations. But he also drew the boundary lines between the races. There's a belief among a lot of old, white, tired Southern racists that the reason you have all these different people on different lands is because God clearly wanted us all to be separated. He wanted all these lands, all these different colors, all these people to be apart. But remember, America is the greatest nation on earth. We hear it all the time. Yeah, forget about healthcare and infant mortality rates and how many gun murders we have. Forget about that. We're the greatest. We're the greatest on earth. We are so because we're white. In New Orleans, the city, high atop the city, sit an awful lot of monuments that have to do with Confederate generals. A lot of people from the South that wanted, you know, that fought for the Confederate and who wanted segregation and who wanted slavery. And it just was, because for a long time in this country, it seemed like a fantastic idea to do that, to treat African Americans that way, to have whites be supreme. And Mayor Landrieu down in NOLA, New Orleans, has started taking down those Confederate monuments because he says, how do we explain this? How do we explain to our kids that Robert E. Lee sits up high, right? That Jefferson Davis sits on a... How do we explain to our kids today, in 2017, that kind of thing is acceptable? He says, we can't. And he says, we're going to start taking down these Confederate monuments. And they immediately started getting death threats. They still took down the monuments, but the men, the workers who went out to take down the monuments, had to do so in the dark of night and without any announcement and under heavily armed guards, because so many white supremacists said they will show up and they will kill these workers who are removing these things. But Mayor Landrieu said it is so important for us to take down these symbols, and we're not erasing history. He said it's so important for us to take down these symbols that even with all of that, we're still going to do so.
These statues are not just stone and metal. They're not just innocent remembrances of a benign history. These monuments celebrate a fictional sanitized Confederacy, ignoring the death, ignoring the enslavement, ignoring the terror that it actually stood for. These monuments were part of that terrorism, as much as burning a cross on someone's lawn. Another friend asked me to consider these four monuments from the perspective of an African-American mother or father trying to explain to their fifth-grade daughter why Robert E. Lee sat atop of our city. Can you do it? The Confederacy was on the wrong side of history and humanity. It sought to tear apart our nation and subjugate our fellow Americans to slavery. This is a history we should never forget, and one that we should never, ever again put on a pedestal to be revered.
White supremacists and conservative Christians say that by taking these down, we are erasing our history. No, we're not. We're not erasing our history. They don't put up statues of Hitler in Germany. And there's good reason for that. And we don't do the same thing here. And there are folks, always with the white folks, who believe that it is still a good idea to carry and put on display the Confederate flag. There was a store here in town selling Confederate flag blankets. And a woman went into the store and saw that they were selling them and pointed out, hey, these are a symbol of slavery. This is in Portland. She says, wait, you should not be selling these. And she videotaped her interactions with the guys who work at the store. And they began calling her a liberal bee and all these other things and said, hey, you're just mad that you lost the election. Wait, what? It doesn't make any sense. The Confederate flag is one thing and one thing only. And I don't care if you're a popular Southern rock band. I don't care if you're Kid Rock. I don't care who you are. If you're displaying the Confederate flag, it is now, and it has always been, a symbol of slavery. The Civil War, plain and simple, was fought over the preservation of slavery. And if you are putting that flag on display in this day and age, at this time, then you are saying that you wish that we had kept slavery in place and we had kept African Americans in bondage. And there's no two ways about that. You don't get to pretend that that is not true. That is the history, and you can't deny it. And the Confederate flag has, in effect, become the American swastika. Quoting here from an article. So there was, at one of these places, this one was in Charlottesville, Virginia, they were removing a statue of Robert E. Lee. I was at a bookstore, and I read the back of a Bill O'Reilly book, and it was about the Civil War. And he said, this book is lies about the Civil War. These are the lies they tell about the Civil War. And I got halfway through the blurb, and he was calling Robert E. Lee a brilliant and genius and all these other things. God, love it. I don't even have to open your stupid book, you groper. Wow, and I already know what's going to be in it. So one of these statues, this one of Robert E. Lee, the Confederate general, was being removed in Charlottesville. A bunch of marchers showed up, wielding torches, quoting here, by wielding torches in a protest staged by night, the demonstrators nodded to Nazi rallies held during the 1930s at Nuremberg, where the open flame was revered as a mystical means of purifying the Aryan spirit. This wasn't by chance. They didn't just show up at night with torches. We've all got flashlights on our cell phones now, right? We've also got real flashlights. They could have showed up with that, if they really wanted to see in the dark, but they knew what they were doing. It was symbolism. Showing up where they were removing this Confederate statue and carrying these torches, right? And then they began chanting blood and soil. Now, that may sound benign to you, but blood and soil is a Nazi-era slogan connected to the German ethnic purity to cultivation of the land, and more broadly, quoting here, to the notion that the master race was divinely, God, was divinely entitled to confiscate the holdings of lesser peoples, even if it meant slaughtering them along the way. The demonstrators at Charlottesville, led by the theatrically inclined white supremacist Richard Spencer, had no real interest in the civic or aesthetic value of the monument they ostensibly came to defend. The essence of their argument was that any attempt to renounce Confederate ideology by moving this or any monument would be an assault to the so-called white race. History here, quoting again, Hitler in Mein Kampf. described the United States as the one state that had made headway toward what he regarded as a healthy and utterly necessary racist regime. Historians have long sought to minimize the importance of that message, but in recent years, archival research in Germany has shown that the Nazis were keenly focused on Jim Crow segregation laws, on statutes that criminalized interracial marriage, and other policies that created second-class citizenship in the United States. The Yale legal scholar, James Q. Whitman, fleshes this out to eerie effect in his new book, Hitler's American Model, The United States and the Making of Nazi Race Law. He illustrates how German propagandists sought to normalize the Nazi agenda domestically by putting forth the United States as a model. They assured the German people that Americans had racist policies and politics, just as Germany did, including special laws directed against Negroes which limit their voting rights, freedom of movement, and career possibilities. Embracing the necessity of lynching, one propagandist wrote, "What is lynch justice if not the natural resistance of the Volk to an alien race that is trying to gain the upper hand?" In other words, lynching was a way, it was terrorism. It was a way, white, Christian, American terrorism. It was a way of keeping African Americans down. Because they didn't take African Americans inside buildings and just beat them and slaughter them. They took them out and they found the highest tree and they would lynch them and they would leave them hanging and rotting for days or weeks at a time. As a way of saying to other African Americans, hey, don't get too uppity, you might be next. Quoting here, Nazism and the tradition of American white supremacy that is memorialized in monuments throughout the South are the fruit of the same poisonous tree. In this light, the Confederate flag can legitimately be seen as an alternate version of the Nazi emblem. After the war, Germany tried to put Nazism back in a box by banning public display of swastikas and other emblems of the Third Reich. Later generations understood that to wear such an insignia was to smear oneself with history's worst filth. Many Americans, however, have failed to grasp this point. This explains why one still sees people parading around with both Nazi emblems and Confederate flags, openly embracing the meanings of both.
I think a couple things. You look, we didn't use chemical weapons in World War II. You know, you had a, you know, someone as despicable as Hitler who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons.
And I suppose their ignorance. You can't say, well, you know, they clearly know this stuff, because that was Sean Spicer, the president's spokesman. And he, for whatever reason, didn't realize that Hitler used. So maybe they don't realize how much they really are like him. And this isn't to say, you know, that Trump is Hitler and, you know, these guys are Nazis and all the rest, but you can't get away from the similarities. For them, it was the Jews. For Americans, it's African, you know, for white people, it's African Americans, and white supremacists, it's African Americans, and it's Asians, and it's Somalis, and it's Mexicans, which really got the brunt of the hatred during the 2016 election. And that's not enough, because then there's Chris Kobach. Chris Kobach is a lawyer, and the only thing he works on, you can find this over at the SPLC website, the Southern Poverty Law Center. The only thing he works on as a lawyer are implementing, creating and implementing racist policies. So who is Chris Kobach? He is the Secretary, Kansas Secretary of State. Quoting here, and he's been a central figure in the nativist movement for more than a decade, and is the architect of Arizona's notorious Papers, Please law, as well as a series of other anti-immigrant statutes enacted by states and municipalities in the last decade. A Yale-trained lawyer, Kobach has served as counsel to the Immigration Reform Law Institute, IRLI, since 2004. IRLI is the legal arm of the Federation for American Immigration Reform, FAIR, a group whose leaders have historical ties to white supremacists and eugenicists who have made numerous racist statements. He joined IRLI after a 2-year stint is a White House fellow working in the U.S. Justice Department under Attorney General John Ashcroft during the Bush administration. For 15 years, Kobach has worked to enact the nativist agenda, often from within the government. As Secretary of State since 2010, he has continued to serve as legal counsel to IRLI. Here are highlights of his anti-immigration activism. As a White House fellow working in the Justice Department beginning in 2001, Kobach shepherded a program requiring tens of thousands of Muslim and Middle Eastern visa holders to register with the government and to be fingerprinted. The program, the NSEXRS, the National Security Entry Exit Registration System, was operational until 2011 when it was shut down after drawing broad criticism for its racial profiling. In 2002, he wrote a memo for John Ashcroft, essentially outlining the policies that would become Arizona's SB 1070. He argued that local and state police have the power to arrest undocumented immigrants for civil violations in immigration law. The Justice Department of 2002 reduced the number of Board of Immigration Appeals judges from 19 to 11, creating a backlog of cases that had disastrous consequences for immigrants. Kobach proudly took credit. He also ran for Congress in 2004, receiving $10,000 in campaign donations from the U.S. Immigration PAC, which was operated by FAIR founder John Tenton's wife. Kobach had joined IRLI, FAIR's legal arm, that year. Kobach lost the election in part because his opponent attacked him for his ties to FAIR and identified him as a racist. Kobach embraced birtherism, which we know was purely racism. He embraced it while campaigning for Secretary of State in Kansas. Questions about President Obama's birthplace are fair, he said, as long as Obama failed to release his long-form birth certificate. In 2012, he proposed banning foreign law as a policy position for the Republican National Convention, which adopted the language into its platform. As justification, Kobach claimed, in cases involving either spousal abuse or assault or other crimes against person, sometimes defenses are raised that are based on Sharia law. The worst thing, and this is something that has far-reaching effect, with Republicans not serving anyone's interests except for the super wealthy, they have to find ways to keep winning elections. And you can say that right now people are voting for Republicans because dagnabbit, they're just so friggin' happy with them. But allow me to say this. If they're so happy with them, why is Congress's approval rating in the tank? Why is Trump's approval rating so low that he could be impeached on that alone? And which is not to say that it's a legal basis, but clearly people, the vast majority of Americans, do not want him as president. They either do not like him as president, actively hate him as president, or are just not sure about him as president. Of course, Republicans, it's in over 80%. Oh, they just think he's the cat's meow. But for the rest of us, those of us that are normal, we don't think that he's doing a fantastic job. As a matter of fact, we think he might be a little bit nuts, but I digress. But the big thing that has made Kobach a rock star in the white supremacist community and in the Republican Party alike is something called interstate cross-check. And here's the way interstate cross-check works. So they find, they take this huge database of all these names from all these states, and they match them up names with race. You know, so you've got, you know, Tyrone Smith over here in this state, and you got Tyrone Smith over here in this state. You know, say you got Tyrone Smith in Kansas and you got Tyrone Smith in Utah. And they go, aha, it's the exact same Tyrone Smith. They match it up based on race. Those are the names that they're looking for. They're not looking for John Smith because John Smith is a white name. And there's a pretty solid chance that John Smith is going to vote Republican. But when they look at, say, African-American names, or when they look at Spanish names, they know that those groups tend to vote largely Democratic. So Tyrone, you know, might have the same first and last name in these two states, but he'll have a different age and he'll have a different middle initial. But that won't matter. He'll take this name from this state and this name from this state and wipe both people off both rolls in both states, thereby reducing the number of people on the voting rolls in those two states. Now, Interstate cross-check has to be embraced by your state's Secretary of State, which means it's not being embraced in every state. Generally, it's not being embraced in blue states and is seen as nothing more than a cynical way of wiping voters, Democratic voters, off the rolls. It has nothing to do with election fraud or voter fraud or any of this other, these other things. Chris Kobach, as a white supremacist, has found a way, and it seems legitimate. It looks legitimate to a lot of people if you explain it that way, right? He takes this name that's the same and this name that's the same, wipes them off the rolls. Clearly, they're the same person. I think a lot of people would say, that sounds reasonable. But when you look at the reason he does it, he finds out their ethnicity and then wipes those names off the rolls and only those names. And then he says, look, hey, if we got to go to court and prove, you know, that we are legit, then we'll do it. And he's a lawyer, a white nativist lawyer. And they've wiped tens of thousands of people off the rolls in a lot of red states and in a lot of purple states or states where any state where the Secretary of State would allow them to do this. And it's based on this one thing. They know that white people largely vote for the Republican Party, that African Americans, Mexicans, and all the others, they do not. And so they have found and made legal a way for wiping them off the rolls. And this guy is a rock star, not just in the Republican Party, but also in the white supremacist movement. And you may not have heard of him before today, but you need to look out for him in future elections because he's going full tilt boogie with this right now. And the white supremacists in America couldn't be happier.
There's a lot of misconceptions about Black Lives Matter. That's because the media sucks. I'm not an expert, but I am a black guy. And we're here at Viceland to clear all the noise. Peep this. When people say all lives matter, they're dismissing black lives. They're dismissing centuries of oppression. Imagine, if you will, your black child sitting in a classroom, and the first thing you learn about your history is slavery before you learn about African civilizations. And on top of that, Mississippi just abolished slavery in 2013. So when people say Black Lives Matter, they say that because systemic white supremacy has made it so that black lives don't matter. That's like your house is on fire, and the fire department comes and says, what about all the rest of the houses? What about that cat in that tree? What about the budget cuts? Meanwhile, your house is burning down. All lives do matter, but what we're trying to say is that black lives matter too. So there you have it. I can't explain almost 500 years of black oppression in such a short-ass video. And it's not going to stop all the crazy things people are going to say about me below. But at least now you're being a foreign racist.
I remember learning about slavery in grammar school. It was a shock to me because I grew up, at that point in my life, kindergarten and in preschool, I was in San Diego County, San Diego, California. And when I learned about slavery of African Americans, I couldn't help but look around at my classmates. Perhaps what I was searching for was the horror on their faces. And I didn't see a lot of it. I grew up mostly, 80-90% of the people that I grew up around in the early stage of my life were African Americans. And when I showed up to school, I remember my mom's boyfriend at the time, I talked to him a number of years later, after him and my mom were no longer together. And I don't remember those early days of school, but I remember him saying to me, it was a shock to me. It was my mom's boyfriend talking, a white guy. It was a shock to me dropping you off, you know, enrolling you and dropping you off at school. And he goes, and you were the only white kid in your classroom. I mean, that's how thick it was. We were just surrounded by African Americans. And it wasn't strange to me. I mean, I knew I was clearly different, but it wasn't strange to me because that's all I really knew at that point. When I learned about slavery, I went, whoa. I just looked around. And then realizing later on, perhaps the reason I didn't see as much horror is because they had already learned in their households about a lot of this history, about the history of African Americans being slaves. But I didn't learn about it in my home. I learned about it at school. But for them, they had already learned about it. It was already a reality. I remember how stunning that was to learn. The dismissal of Black Lives Matter, and I'm going to say it, If you're dismissing the Black Lives Matter movement, you're a racist. And racism is not a black and white thing. Well, it isn't. It isn't. It's not. There's a spectrum. There's a spectrum for racism. And you fall to the hard right for sure if you're dismissing the Black Lives Matter movement. The man that killed Alton Sterling, and we got the killing of Alton Sterling on video, and we know that Alton Sterling did nothing wrong. I believe it was in Minneapolis. Last week, the cop that killed Alton Sterling was acquitted. We got it on video. Think about this. We got it on video. He killed him in public. We got it on video that the man did nothing wrong, that this black man did nothing wrong. He was murdered in front of his girlfriend in his car when he was pulled over for something stupid like a busted taillight. We got it on video, and it was shared millions of times. Millions of people have seen it. And yet, the white officer that freaked out and murdered him was acquitted last week. So how does that happen, especially when we got the overwhelming evidence sitting right in front of us? Is this not the new lynching? Is this not our new way of saying to African Americans, you better keep yourself in line, because these gentlemen have a gun, a badge, the power of the state behind them, and life, your life or death in their hands. And you'd better straighten up, better pull his pants up, you better sit straight. And you better answer us, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. Are not these police killings the new American form of lynching? Seeing how we are completely okay as a country with this kind of thing happening. So much so that you've got a bunch of people marching around dismissing the Black Lives Matter movement and then saying, well, it's not because they're racist. It's because there's not a real problem. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of white people didn't think that lynching was a problem either. It's pretty easy to say when you're not the target. I have a lot of folks telling me right now, I don't worry about Trump. Hey, it's okay. Don't worry about Trump. It's not that bad. That's not bad. Just don't worry about him. But the people that are telling me that are white, male, straight, and largely Christian. If you caught that description, those folks, a lot of them aren't going to be targets of this administration. So why did we have slavery? Why did we have the Republican Party to this day still actively working towards making slavery a reality, but not just for African Americans, but for anybody? It's about class warfare, and it always has been. And when they fight against things like fair wages, right, raising the minimum wage, when they fight against benefits that we, the workers, should be entitled to, not because we should just get free stuff, but we should get because we work for you. If your business does well, if I work for you and your business makes $1 million, like say me and a dozen people work for you, your business makes $1 million, right? And it in the minimum in this city is, say, oh, $20 an hour in order for me to afford an apartment and for me to afford clothes and for me to afford food. And you decide that you want to pay me $7 an hour. I help make your business a success. Let's say half a dozen people, right? Half a dozen people work for the company. And let's say you make $1.5 million, $2 million or whatever, right? And you want to pay me $7 an hour, knowing damn well I can't afford that around here. And there are two sides of this. There are progressives saying, give them the raise so that they can live with dignity, so that they can afford to eat, so that they can afford to have a roof over their heads. Give them the raise. And then you've got a lot of conservatives saying, don't. Don't give them the raise. It's going to collapse the economy. It's going to ruin America. And how do we say that? What a lot of conservatives are fighting for is what I'm going to refer to as the Southern economy. When we had slavery, slavery was never really about how much they hated black people. It was about free labor. The Southern economy depended upon free labor. And seeing African Americans as less than human beings, it was pretty easy to turn them into slaves. Then we had the Civil War. You got the two sides fighting for and against slavery. And that's history. You can't argue with that. A lot of the Confederates that fought in the Civil War, they themselves didn't own slaves. See, owning a person today is expensive. Owning a person back then was expensive. Your boss can, in effect, own you. And today, with low wages, you can have several bosses. A lot of the people that fought in the Civil War did not own slaves themselves, but they were fighting for the rich white guys who did own slaves. And they went out into the fields with guns and all the rest, and they fought for something that they didn't even have and that they were never going to have because they themselves were the working class, but they believed in it. They believed that those rich white guys should get to own as many black people as they want. And they went out and they fought and died for them. And they fight to this day for those same oligarchs that were enslaving everybody back then. When one of us is oppressed, we're all oppressed. James Baldwin is becoming more prominent these days. There is a documentary that's going to come out about him soon called I Am Not Your Negro. And I haven't got a chance to see it yet, but I'm a huge fan of this guy. And I've watched a ton of his speeches on YouTube. When I was watching one the other day, something really, really struck me about what he said with respect to the Southern economy. And I wanted to play it for you.
Let me put it this way. That from a very literal point of view, the harbors and the ports and the railroads of the country, the economy, especially of the southern states, could not conceivably be what it has become if they had not had, and do not still have indeed, and for so long, so many generations, cheap labor. I am stating very seriously, and this is not an overstatement, I picked the cotton and I carried it to market and I built the railroads under someone else's whip for nothing. The Southern oligarchy, which has until today so much power in Washington and therefore some power in the world, was created by my labor and my sweat and the violation of my women and the murder of my children. This, in the land of the free and the home of the brave, and no one can challenge that statement. It is a matter of historical record.
The easiest thing to do is to get us to take a look at one another and notice physical differences. Male, female, black, white, Asian, and then to take those things, use them as a weapon, and then turn us against one another. And now we have a gigantic movement of white supremacists, not just in the streets. Hate groups have grown exponentially since 2008 when Barack Obama became president. And now those hate groups have prominent seats in the White House. And they're turning us against one another. Who knows if Donald Trump is really a racist? Who knows if anybody in the White House that espouses these white supremacist values, who knows if they're really racist or if they have just found an excuse for keeping the Southern economy going? Even the healthcare bill that we have right now, it does nothing for healthcare and it cuts the taxes of millionaires and billionaires by 3%. That's what they're fighting for. That's their number one bill right now. A tax cut bill for millionaires and billionaires that cuts the capital gains tax rate by something like 2 or 3%, just teeny tiny. But so often we're being told that we need to look upon the black and brown people in this country with suspicion and scorn. And we need to get them out of our land. That's what we're told so often. The problem, and this is old, this is always the way it's been, in some form or another, nativism, racism. They say it's those people turning your fellow Americans into the other. It's those people. It's those people. It's those immigrants. So there's a man, and I'm going to mess up his name, I'm certain of it, because I've only ever read it, never heard it. Jacque Palige. He's 92 years old, and he lives in Queens, New York. Quoting here, a letter from 70 state assembly members to U.S. Attorney Jeff Sessions demanded the deportation of the one-time Nazi death camp guard who still lives in Queens. He's 92 now, but he remains illegally in the United States 13 years after an American court upheld his deportation order. People have protested in front of his house asking that if we're going to throw out these people who do not belong here, who legally can't be here. Well, throw this guy out. They've written to Jeff Sessions, you need to throw this guy out. Jeff Sessions has zero to no interest in throwing this guy out. And why is it? Well, because this gentleman is white and an old Nazi guard. He escaped Germany after World War II by claiming that he was a farmer and war refugee. And I hear so much, they're taking all of our benefits. These immigrants are coming here and taking our benefits. Well, here's one. Jacque Palige. He is taking, he's actually collecting Social Security right now. And he's an immigrant. And he doesn't have the right to be here. But he's not going to be deported because that's not what it's about. That's not ever what it's been about. He's white. He's a Nazi. And as far as a lot of white conservative Christian Republicans are concerned, he can stay. But all these other brown people, they need to go. Noam Chomsky recently called the Republican Party the most dangerous group in the world. I'm inclined to agree.
You called the Republican Party the most dangerous organization on earth.
In human history. There has never, it's an outrageous statement, and when I said it, I said, look, this is a very outrageous statement, but is it true?
But you're rating them worse than the Kim Jong-un of North Korea or ISIS, who are very...
Is ISIS dedicated to trying to destroy the prospects for organized human existence?
Right, is that bad, the Republican
Party?
Well,
what does it mean to say... Not only we're not doing anything about climate change, but we're trying to accelerate the race to the precipice.
And you don't entertain the possibility that they may be genuine in their belief that this is...
Doesn't matter whether they genuinely believe it or not. But if the consequence of that is let's use more fossil fuels, let's refuse to subsidize developing countries, if that's the consequence... That's extremely dangerous.
And everything, absolutely everything that they do appears to be in the interest of making money. When they want legalized slavery, and when they want to pay you as little as possible, that's effectively what it is. It's legalized slavery. They just want to make more money for the millionaires and billionaires. When they want to trash the earth without cleaning it up, they just want to make more money. That's what absolutely everything goes back to. What about DACA? What about DAPA, which are the deferred action programs for kids who came here as immigrants through no fault of their own or their parents? Well, Trump is now talking about getting rid of these programs, these Obama-era programs, and going after these families. And it's not because he believes it's going to make any sort of a positive difference, but that racist base that he has, and that's what it is. It's a horribly racist base. He needs to keep them in line, and this is one of the ways he's going to help keep them in line.
There's a lot of consternation. The anxiety is extremely high, especially among children who are fearful that they may not no longer see their mothers or their fathers. Children who are being dropped off at school and are fearful that come in the afternoon that standing at the curbside waiting for their mother, father, they actually may not appear. The panic and the anger is so high that there has been talk about human shields, about ordinary U.S. citizens actually protecting nannies, gardeners, people who clean our homes and take care of our children, and creating this sort of human chain to protect them. I don't condone this type of comportment, but I understand why the anxiety, the consternation is so high here in California.
Another form of white Christian terror. Get them all afraid. Try to push them into the shadows. and it can't be seen as anything else. It's not going to make our country better, economically, socially, or any of the rest. But there they are, pushing a policy that appears to focus on race, but it's really just about finding a way to keep the support of the white supremacists in this country.
What white people have to do is try to find out in their own hearts why it was necessary to have a nigger in the first place. Because I'm not a nigger. I'm a man. But if you think I'm a nigger, it means you need it. Then you got to find out why.
That's one of those words, and I've said it no fewer than a dozen times on this microphone. That's one of those words that I really think needs to go away. Because when we use it, when Bill Maher used it a couple weeks ago and thought that he could just get away with it, it's a dehumanizing term. It was then, and it most certainly is now.
It's what a classic authoritarian does. It's not just about influencing your institutions, your values. They want to influence your reality.
Racism is a real thing, but it doesn't have to be. We allow it to be. I mentioned on last week's show about all the religious folks who just can't wait to go to heaven. No one wants to die, but everyone wants to go to heaven. Just can't wait to go to heaven. I'm making the plea once again that we could make the world better than it is if we learned to treat one another better. If we stop looking upon our neighbors with suspicion and scorn. And I understand I excoriate a lot of Republicans on this program, but the kind of thinking, especially the kind of religious thinking that leads them to sexism, racism, and homophobia, it doesn't make any sense to me. So when I excoriate them, what I'm saying is you need to drop that kind of thinking and you need to quit coming after me because you believe that I am the divider. I don't hate you because you're a Republican. I do not hate you because you're a man. I do not hate you because you're a Christian. But I am disappointed with you because you have decided that hate, racism, homophobia, or misogyny, that hate is the way that you are going to get things done. That those are the things that you believe and that those are the things that are in your heart. You may not admit it, but I'll admit it. You and I, even if you're a conservative, you and I essentially want the same thing. What we disagree on are the means, the ways to get there. And what we can do is we can talk, and we can compromise, and we can eventually get to that point. But as long as you're willing to live with hatred, misogyny, homophobia, and racism, in your heart, we're not going to get there. And if you say that perhaps maybe I need to come over to your side a little bit, I can't. At least not with respect to these things, racism, homophobia, and misogyny. I'm never going to be those things. But if you want to talk about public-private partnerships or tax policy or housing policy, then I'm willing to talk with you. But if it is hate, if you're stemmed in hate, if you're starting from a place of hate, yeah, that's not where I'm going to be able to compromise with you. And it's ridiculous. The Republicans, including President Trump, they don't care about you, any of you, not me, not you, not anybody, themselves, only themselves. The fact that we're having a vigorous public debate about the health care bill that was passed right now, when all it does is cut taxes for millionaires and billionaires while actually annihilating your health care, is absolutely insane. The fact that we are talking about our brown-skinned brothers and sisters right now and the way that we talk about them, deport them, build the wall, kick them out, when we are all Americans and we all contribute. Yeah, I understand there are a few that don't contribute, but you know what? What are you going to do? You're going to go around killing them all? We have to take care of everybody. My brother's keeper. Isn't that what your Bible says? You and I, the working people, we are not the problem, but the devils that we put into office, that we put at the head of our businesses. It would appear that we are the problem, and it's not that. We're buying into a lie, and we're turning a blind eye to those who betray us. To me,
You know, we know this is not what affirmative action is, but a lot of people think affirmative action means giving somebody something they don't deserve against somebody who otherwise worked for it. I don't want to hear anybody else for the next 4 years criticize even the worst understanding of affirmative action. This is the most incomprehensibly incompetent group of people who have ever been sent to government to run this particular country.
Stop giving them power. Stop giving them time. Stop watching them on TV. Stop listening to their ignorant words that are doing nothing more than turning us against one another. Racism in this country was designed for one thing and one thing only: cheap labor, the Southern economy. And we need to not buy into it. We as working people, we're hard workers, but we're not as educated as, say, those in government. And so we tend to fall for a lot of the tricks and the lies that they put out there. And if you're listening to me today, you're listening to me now, and you listen to this show ever, just let me tell you, they don't have our best interest at heart. We do. We know what we want. We know what we need. And as long as we are unwilling to talk to one another, as long as we are willing to call each other names, and as long as we are willing to engage in racism, homophobia, and misogyny, we're never going to get there. And I know that might be tough for a lot of people to drop those ideas, but it's going to be the only way forward. You don't have to die to go to heaven. It can be right here and right now, but that's only if you want it. And at this point, at least at this point in history, there are clearly not enough people that want it. But we can change that. And we will. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us, facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, or hate mail is just a general statement. Or you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So, for Peter Rechautos, and as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and a special thanks to you for being here and listening. This is Melvin, signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.